Good morning and welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, partner in charge of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. We created the center in 1998 to encourage discussion and research to new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Radio Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation this morning is with Lewis Kincannon, the director of the Bureau of Census. Good morning, Lewis.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Great, and thanks for joining us. And also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Brenda Dixon. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Lewis, let's start by giving our listeners a grounding in the census. Could you begin by talking about its mission and its history and the vision of the Bureau?
Well, the Census and the Census Bureau have a very long history. At the Constitutional Convention in 1787, there was a deadlock on the business of how to share power between the states. Should they all be equally represented, or should they be represented based on something else? Naturally, the wealthier, more populated states thought that they should be represented more heavily in the government than small states. But small states, these were sovereign states at the time and still remain so in very important ways, they thought everybody should be represented equally. The solution was to have a bicameral legislature, as we all know now, but this was a novel way of approaching the issue. And I think it's important for us to remember that at that time, almost everything in the government of this country was being invented. We used a lot of models from England and models from other countries as well, but in general, everything had to be invented. So the invention of the time was to allocate the state's equal power in the upper house, the Senate, and variable power in a representation in the lower house. Wealth was considered, but wealth is very hard to measure unambiguously. The choice was made to base it on the number of inhabitants in each state. Counting people is not as easy as it sounds, but it's easier than wealth. So that was a prudent decision. And so in the Constitution, it says in Article 1 that there shall be an enumeration of the inhabitants of the states within 3 years of the ratification of this Constitution and every 10 years thereafter. And so we have the longest continuous series of censuses of any country in the world. There are older censuses, of course, and there are other very long series. But for a regular series with a census embedded in the Constitution, we're unusual, if not unique.
How do you describe the size of the Bureau, its budget, its people, and the range of skill sets that the employees have?
Well, the number of people varies during the decade, as you can imagine. Right now, the number of people is about 14,000. Most of those people work in the field outside Washington. There are about 4,000 people who work in Washington at the headquarters, most on this campus, but some on buildings a few miles away. We have 12 regional offices. There are about 50 people in each regional office. So the bulk are people who work part-time, for the most part, out of their homes, collecting information for us. We also have a large processing center, something the private sector might call a fulfillment center, in Jeffersonville, Indiana. And it handles most of our mail surveys, which are businesses as well as households. And we have 3 telephone call centers for certain follow-up operations in general. We don't make cold calls. In terms of budget, we are this year about $900 million in appropriated funds, and we have about another $250 million of work that we do on contract for other federal agencies. The statistical system in the federal government is decentralized, but to some extent the economic inefficiencies of decentralization are overcome by many agencies using the Census Bureau to collect and process the data. So we have the economies of scale and uniformity of practice, and yet other agencies maintain the policy control of how they want to spend their money on statistics. You mentioned skill sets. Well, we certainly hire statisticians, people with formal training, majors in college, or a sufficient number of hours in statistics. We call them mathematical statisticians here. They're very important to the success of the Census Bureau's mission and have been since the 1940s. We hire a lot of other people who are trained in social and other sciences who have a certain level of quantitative training, formal quantitative training, and they plan and carry out, operate our surveys, supervise them, and we call these survey statisticians. Then, of course, we have demographers who are also will have strong quantitative training. We hire a lot of people who have studied psychology or geography or economics. Then we have more specialized things. Of course, we have a great many people that work in IT. We have some narrower specialties. Some lawyers work here. They're formally attached to the Commerce Department's Office of General Counsel, but they work on our particular problems. We have a title of the U.S. Code that's devoted to the Census Bureau, so there are unique characteristics of the law under which we operate. And we have a lot of personnel off. You have a lot of people, you have a lot of personnel. And when you consider that at the time of the decennial census, we will greatly expand our workforce to several hundred thousand over a period of a few months. We have to be hired, they have to be screened to a certain extent, they have to be trained, employed, supervised, paid, and then dismissed in an orderly fashion. We have a lot of labor law.
Can you tell us something about your role as the director?
The role of the director depends a lot on background and personality, I suppose. I have a lot of experience at the Census Bureau. I've worked here for three different periods, almost 43 years. So I worked here as a student fresh out of university for a dozen years. I came back after a six-year assignment at the Office of Management and Budget, and was deputy director, who is the top career official and is the chief operating officer, and I did that for about 11 years. I worked for three different directors at that time. Most of the directors bring a varied background, and some bring the kind of background that I have, and so my functioning is a little bit different. I'm probably more involved in operational details than the average director. I try to watch my boundaries and not intrude too much into the chief operating officer's territory. The chief operating officer is someone that I have worked with but never in the same organization for a long time. So we know one another well, and since he had never worked at the Census Bureau before, he relies on my sometimes useful experience here, but I rely on him to run the agency and make sure that it carries out the work involved. And that's always a strong characteristic of the relationship in the two jobs. I try to take a strong interest in the major directions. When I came 3 years ago, it was not yet decided whether we would conduct a traditional census in 2010 or whether we would have a major departure. The research, the planning, a good deal of the testing had been carried out for a major change in the census, moving away from a long-form, short-form census, which has been the practice in this country since 1940, and moving the long-form content into a survey conducted every year so that in 2010, one might have only a short form, a simple census. I've devoted most of my energy to advocacy of this because a quick period of study was sufficient to tell me this was highly advantageous to the country. And so I talked a lot about that in public occasions, to the press, to local government officials, tribal officials, members of Congress, governors, and so on, explaining that we could do a better job in the census in 2010 by working only with a short-form census. And furthermore, we could have data based on the annual survey available every year going down to the neighborhood level. And the way things are changing in this country, we need those measures more often than once a decade. There was no local official who thought we didn't need to do this. Everybody knows that they need this kind of information annually. And rural counties found that having up-to-date local information enabled them to allocate resources more effectively. There was an interesting case study in Fulton County, Pennsylvania, where they used the test data. It was a test county in this American Community Survey. They used it to allocate flu vaccines when the flu vaccines were in rather constrained supply. And the report was that they had only four doses misallocated. Now, that was an incredible report of successfully using statistics to meet the needs of the public. So I've devoted a lot of time to advocating this change. By the way, it saves more than $1 billion in the life cycle cost of the census, so that's attractive. The difficulty is that we have to ask for a lot more money in the earlier years of the decade in order to save that money and do a more efficient job in 2010. We were successful in getting bipartisan support in the Congress, and now it looks like we're on the way. We have the approval, and this will be the way that we take the census in 2010. This is pretty important because, as I say, we haven't changed our system in a large way since 1940. We've made changes in our techniques and so on, but not a major change in the way that it is collected. So that has absorbed quite a lot of attention. But there are many other issues here. For example, where do we count prisoners? Our basic approach to counting people is we count them where they usually are. And if you're in prison, you're usually in prison. So that's our simple approach to counting them. But people in major cities point out that their prisoners are usually, well, if they're sentenced, they're not in jails in the city. They're in state or federal prisons, usually in rural areas. And they say it deprives them of the resources they will need to care for the family or care for the returning and reentry into society. This issue is not resolved. It can be resolved in a number of ways, including by state officials deciding they're going to use existing statistics to reallocate prisoners to other areas for certain purposes. It also could be decided if the Congress makes a choice about where they should be counted.
It's an interesting point, especially about the prisoners you're describing. Rejoin us in a few minutes as we continue our conversation with Lou Kincannon, Director of the Census, when the Business of Government Hour returns.